I'll reserve 3 minutes, please.
Okay. You may proceed.
Good morning, Your Honor. Nicholas Dalluiso for the appellant. This should have been a relatively straightforward statute of limitations case. The facts are, I believe, completely undisputed. It's also undisputed that the statute of limitations on a deed of trust is 6 years. What is disputed is when does that 6 years start running? The Edmondsons believe that the deed of trust is a separate document, a kind of separate and distinct document from the underlying obligation.
Counsel, let me ask you some questions.
Sure.
During the summary judgment hearing, the trial court apparently took the position that the statute began to run in October of 2009, I believe. Is that correct?
Well, you know, it was hard to understand what...
That's why I'm asking.
Yeah, it was very hard to understand from her ruling, you know, where she was, what point she was using as...
Well, let me back up.
Sure.
Let me back up. The complaint by the Edmondsons, as I read it, suggests that they believe the statute of limitations began to run on November 1st, 2014. Is that correct?
That is, that the first default was on November 1st, 2008.
Okay.
And
your position, as I take it, is that there were continuing monthly payments due, and that obligation did not terminate until just before the discharge in bankruptcy. Is that correct?
No, that's not correct.
Okay.
I'm understanding your question right. This is an installment note.
I understand.
It's a 30-year note. So the statute of limitations on the first installment due, or the installment due, let me rephrase that. The installment, the first.
Your position is the statute runs on each installment.
Each installment.
6 years after that installment became due. So
correct.
6 years after the last payment was due under the 30-year note would be the last time any foreclosure action could be started.
Right. And if it was that late and there was only one payment left and they went to foreclose,
they could cure by tendering the last payment only.
They would be one payment that they could foreclose on.
So under this factual scenario, I believe your position is that that last payment was due in January of 2015.
Still not understanding. The last payment under the note?
The last periodic payment under the note prior to the discharge in bankruptcy was due when?
Prior to the discharge. The discharge was in December 2013.
Okay.
So the payment, the last payment before that would be the November payment.
Okay. So under your theory, you have timely commence this nonjudicial foreclosure proceeding because?
Under our theory, the first date of default is November 2008. As of November 2008, if we go into December 2008 and attempt to foreclose, there are still numerous payments, numerous installments that have not become due yet, and there's numerous installments that have become due but are not 6 years old. At that point, if we foreclosed in December, only one of those payments has passed the statute of limitations. So only one defaulted payment is now 6 years old. So what we're addressing is that only the payments that are in default that are older than 6 years in default, those can no longer be foreclosed upon. The remainder of the installments, because it's an installment note, can be foreclosed upon.
So this is an eroding fund being reduced each month by the amount of one payment.
What they could foreclose upon after the 6 years of the first default. Am I clear? Am I working?
Not particularly. You take the position that you timely commence the proceeding by sending out your notice of default when?
On October 13th, 2014.
Okay, so under that position, that would have been within 6 years of the last payment due under the installment, right?
That would have been 6 years from the first date of default of an installment.
Okay. And that was what date?
That was November 1st, 2008.
Okay. The trial court apparently took the position that the, at least at the summary judgment hearing, that the lien of the deed of trust was extinguished by the personal discharge in bankruptcy.
Yes, that was very confusing. So attempting to understand her oral order on the motion, it's very hard to understand how she came to that conclusion. I've read it many times, and it's confusing.
Your position is that it's wrong under the law.
It is wrong under the law, and if I address her order in her summary judgment, her written order in her summary judgment doesn't give us any direction, but a written order in her order for the motion for reconsideration, she's completely contradictory. She says in paragraph 2 of that order that a lien does survive a discharge.
The time is short. Let me just ask you a question. Let's assume that the trial court was wrong under the law.
Yes.
That a personal discharge in bankruptcy does not extinguish the lien of the deed of trust.
Yes.
Are you aware of any authority under state law where the personal discharge of someone under the note would extinguish the lien of the deed of trust?
No, absolutely not.
Okay.
Can I go back and follow up on one statement?
Yes.
The notice of default was issued in October 2014, which is less than 6 years from the first defaulted payment.
So exactly.
So what would the consequence have been, let's say, if the notice of default had been sent out in December of 2014, for example? Does that mean the 6 years would have run at that point?
Only to that installment that was in default.
I wanted to make sure I understood.
Yes.
That.
So if we look at the notice of default going out before 6 years from the very first default, under any theory, it's still within the 6 years. And I can go within the rest of my time if you...
Well, you've answered the question. Do you want to save your 3 minutes?
I will save the 3 minutes. Yeah.
Good morning, Your Honors. Andrea Marquez for the Edmondsons. There is one party to this action capable of ensuring that this does not take place, and it's not the Edmondsons. There are two issues as we see them. One is, what event triggers the 6-year statute of limitations for the purpose of foreclosing on a deed of trust? And the second is, what event initiates a nonjudicial foreclosure? Is it the notice of default, or is it the recordation of a notice of trustee sale?
Do you take the position that a discharge of the personal obligation of the note in bankruptcy extinguishes the lien of the deed
no.
of trust?
No, and in fact, we agree with Carrington that the trial court judge's ruling was both contrary to well-established law and very confusing.
So the Supreme Court of the United States is correct?
Correct.
Okay. Second question. Is there any authority under state law to discharge the lien of the deed of trust because the personal obligation under the note no longer exists?
Not that I am aware.
Okay. So your issue really is, in this case, the statute of limitations issue?
Correct.
Okay. In your complaint, you took the position that the statute of limitations began
upon the first mispayment.
First mispayment.
November 1st, 2008. And we take that position because it is well established both in the state and in the country that a contract claim accrues on the date of the breach.
Do you agree that the promissory note is an installment contract?
I do, but that I want to reiterate that the note is not at issue in this case at all. We have a discharge order. We have an order for relief from stay dated October 22, 2009, authorizing the bank to foreclose on its deed of trust. The note has no bearing on this case. We're talking strictly about the deed of trust. It is
how
a distinctly separate contract.
When you have to, unless you're alleging a breach of one of the other duties under the deed of trust, you have to look to the note to see what the breach is.
The BECU versus Burns case out of this court makes clear that a promissory note is a separate obligation from the deed of trust that secures that note. A breach under the promissory note doesn't always mean a breach under the deed of trust, although it most likely is a nonpayment, and so it would. But there are breaches of the deed of trust that don't constitute a breach of the promissory note. Failure to maintain insurance, failure to pay property taxes. There are a myriad of breaches of a deed of trust that have nothing to do with a promissory note. They are separate. They are distinct. A deed of trust has its own 6-year statute of limitations from the date of the first breach.
Do you agree that the applicable statute of limitations for purposes of the deed of trust is also 6 years?
I do.
Okay.
I do.
So your position is, under my understanding, that the statute of limitations for the deed of trust began to run on November 1st, 2008?
Correct.
And that's based on what?
That's based on the 6-year statute of limitation, RCW 4.
Misunderstanding my question. What event took place on November 1st, 2008, which allowed the statute of limitations to accrue?
Nonpayment of the monthly installment.
Under the promissory note?
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. And so the provision of the deed of trust provided that the lender, Bank of America, through Carrington, had the opportunity to pursue a foreclosure at that point. The statute of limitations was triggered. They could exercise the due on sale clause and foreclose on the property upon that very first missed payment. They chose not to, but that doesn't mean that the statute of limitations was not triggered.
You said a due on sale clause. A due on sale isn't
relevant.
Acceleration.
Power to sell. Acceleration and okay. Power to sell.
Is there any evidence in this record that there was any acceleration of the debt?
There are some conflicting statements made by Carrington in their briefing. They, on the one hand, say, we never accelerated the debt. The Edmondsons are liable on this for 30 years. And on the other hand, are saying that, well, the bankruptcy court granted them a relief from stay.
But my question is there any evidence in the record that the lender exercised the option to accelerate the maturity of the debt, yes or no?
Not prior to the bankruptcy discharge.
Not prior.
And we believe that it is well established that a bankruptcy discharge constitutes an acceleration of the debt for purposes of then foreclosing on the deed of trust.
So the 6 years would then run from the date of the discharge?
We don't contend that that's the date that triggers the statute of limitations.
Well, I understand the breach of the deed of trust piece, but the statute of limitations on the obligations under the note would be triggered for all payments due under the note by the discharge under your theory?
Correct.
Okay, so
if the note were at
issue. If we disagree with you about whether there's a separate statute of limitations for the note and the deed of trust, and say that as long as you can still pursue a payment under the note, you can use the non-judicial process, you would start the 6 years from the date of discharge.
If that was the court's position, then I would say October 22nd, 2009, the date that they were granted relief from the automatic stay, upon confirmation of the Chapter 13 plan, that would trigger.
And what's the authority for that?
Relief from the automatic stay to pursue the entire
outstanding. Do you have a case that says
no,
that?
No, I don't, Your Honor.
Okay.
I don't.
So I want to go back. So both sides seem to be talking about November 1, 2008 as a critical date. What would the appellant have to have done to have acted within the statute of limitations? They issued the notice of default in October 2014. That's not enough?
No. No. A notice of default is a prerequisite to a nonjudicial foreclosure. It does not involve a trustee. A trustee is a mandatory party to a nonjudicial foreclosure. The lender beneficiary can send out the notice of default. The lender beneficiary can send it and then do nothing. They could send 16 before they send a notice of trustee sale. It is a prerequisite only. It is our position that a notice of trustee sale initiates a nonjudicial foreclosure action, and actually it's...
mailing or recording?
Recording is the position that we've taken.
Why is mailing it good enough?
Well, both must be done under the statute, so... effectively, if you've only done one, not both, then it will not have taken effect.
Well, if we analogize to a complaint, a lawsuit, if you either serve or file within the statutory period, you then have 90 days to do the other.
I can't recall the precise language of the deed of trust statute on a notice of trustee's sale, there is a time limitation in which both must be done. But the Vowder versus Quality Loan Service Corporation case, 2010 case out of the Western District, that both parties have cited, is conflicting. There is not a case in Washington that determines whether a notice of default triggers or whether the notice of trustee's sale triggers. And in fact, this case says once a notice of default on the secured obligation occurs, either the beneficiary or the trustee may initiate the nonjudicial foreclosure process by giving a written notice of default. In the very next paragraph, it says the trustee may begin the nonjudicial foreclosure process by giving a notice of trustee sale to the borrower, grantor, and others. There isn't a case that has determined with precision which of those acts triggers, or rather tolls, the statute of limitation for a nonjudicial foreclosure action. It's our position that a notice of default does not involve the trustee. It does not provide statutory notice of the right to restrain a sale. It does not initiate a nonjudicial foreclosure. And so simply mailing the notice of default on October 23rd, 2014 did not initiate the foreclosure. The foreclosure was actually initiated January 15th, I believe it is, of 2015. And so they missed the mark by several months. There's some argument in the briefing about whether or not the statute of limitations was told during the Edmondson's bankruptcy. And I'd like to quickly say that the Hazel versus Van Beek case is the most controlling case on this. It's a Supreme Court of Washington case, 1998. It openly criticized the the case that the bank has relied upon. I can't recall the name, but it openly criticized the 1989 case that said that a statute of limitations is told for the length of time that the automatic stay was in effect. Federal statute 11 U.S.C. section 108C says that they are not told unless it expires during the bankruptcy. And here that was not the case. They had 5 years and 9 months after the bankruptcy to pursue their claim, and they didn't. Thank you, Your Honors.
If I have time to address the three points, I'll start with them in order. The note, whether the note is separate from the statute of limitations is separate from the statute of limitations of the underlying obligation. The deed of trust and the note are intimately related. The deed of trust secures any amounts that are due under the note. So if there's still viable payments due under the note or viable cause of action under the note, then there would be a viable cause of action under the deed of trust. The note specifically references, I'm sorry, the deed of trust specifically references the note. It has the date of the note, has the amount of the note. It specifically references monthly payments under the note. I believe that's in paragraph one. It talks about monthly payments being due. So it's clear that it's reflecting that it's related to the installment note that's paid on a monthly basis. As far as the right to foreclose under a deed of trust only accruing immediately when they have the right to do that, that's not the case. I believe it's one of the last paragraphs, paragraph 18 of the deed of trust. If the lender has accelerated the debt, the deed of trust specifically says that the lender may invoke the power of sale. It doesn't say it will or it shall invoke the power of sale. I would agree with Your Honors that if it was a breach of the deed of trust, yeah, then you would have 6 years because it's not related to a breach of the underlying obligation. In regards to whether the notice of default or the notice of trustee sale is the operative document, the notice of default, the term used in our business it's called the first legal. And it's the first legal because it's the first document required by statute to start a nonjudicial foreclosure.
Do we need to reach that issue in this case? It seems to me that given the other issues about the statute of limitations you each have raised, that that isn't going to be dispositive.
I don't believe it is, Your Honor, and I don't believe the issue of the bankruptcy stay is dispositive either. But if you have any questions on it, I'd be more than happy.
Does this record reflect that there was an acceleration of the maturity of the debt?
No, there is no acceleration of debt anywhere in the record. And whether a discharge accelerated or not, I would completely disagree with that. There's no case law on it. And even if it was, the statute of limitations would have been well beyond the start of either the NOD or the NOTS. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Our last case this morning is the marriage of